Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong, profitable impact on your business.
Good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and my mission each week, each episode, is to bring you the most interesting entrepreneurs and business people that I can find. And these are people who are really excited to freely share their business wisdom, their tips, and their actionable advice with us each week. And today I am chatting with Passion Shift coach, author, and speaker Jolene Moody. Jolene is a former Central New York television reporter and anchor, and she turned that kind of trajectory into becoming a coach, a speaker, and an author. She really wasn't happy where she was. So after struggling for years in a place that just didn't satisfy her true dreams and desires to write and sing and play on stage, she left the security of her job to embark on a journey that allowed her to unearth her greatest dreams and desires while profiting generously at the same time. She is a nationally known speaker and a client closing expert for women entrepreneurs, and she specializes in speaker training and coaching. Jolene studies what's working now, right now, to help women entrepreneurs to make more money, build confidence, and grow a lucrative and sustainable business. And today she confidently guides men and women all over the globe to a place within where they can uncover and discover who and what they truly are meant to be and do all of this while generating very handsomely from their deepest desires and creativity. And I'm hearing that Jolene is having a difficult time logging in, so she's not here yet. We're trying to reach her. My staff is trying to reach her to see if there's an issue with her getting onto the show. And we will just see if she can make it in the next few seconds here. If not, I'm afraid we'll have to reschedule. And I hate to do that because she's got a great, great story. But it does look like she's not going to be here. So let's give it just a couple of more minutes and we can see if she can make it in. Let's hope she does. In the meantime, if you're looking at the show notes, you can go to her website. And let me find her website very quickly. It is jolenemoody.com. And you can find out all about her over there. It's Jolene, J-O-L-E-E-N-E, moody.com. Okay, it looks like she might be here. Jolene, are you here?
Hi, Denise. How are
you? Hi. I was just rambling aimlessly, hoping that we could finally get you in. I was telling our audience that you were having difficulties, and my staff was desperately trying to get you logged in.
You know, it seems like we talked about this before. There's workers down the road from our house. I don't know if it's the tower or what. And I thought, why is it every time I try to connect with this woman, there's something that happens. So I'm glad we finally connected, and I still appreciate your patience more than you know.
Well, I was panicked because I was telling the audience, she's got this great story, and I really want her to be. And just about the time I was about to throw in the towel, I saw your number pop up. And there she is. So I'm so glad you're here.
Me too. Thank you for your patience, truly.
Oh, please. I want people to meet you. Okay, so I introduced you, and I may have sent them to the wrong website because I was working from the top of my head, which on a Friday after pulling 3 all-nighters on a web design is not smart. So I sent them.
So I heard you say JoleneMoody.com, so I think you got it right.
Okay, that was my question. Okay, before we get started, tell people about yourself. Tell people what it is that I find so fascinating about you.
Well,
no pressure, none.
About me, I am a risk taker. I'm a big risk taker, and I am somebody that recognized at several points in my life but never took action until probably about 7 years ago that the only way to go after and get what you want is to be willing to step out and do things that most people wouldn't be willing to do. And I say that because I was a television reporter and an anchor for 10 years in my community, and I'm in central New York. And to rip the Band-Aid off and step away from that job, people told me, that's crazy, that's insane, how can you do that, you're so well established. And I had been on air long enough where I was established in the community as well. And so you tend to think, well, gosh, maybe they're right. Maybe my desire, which was to actually step out and be a voice, a speaker, a lot of people would say motivational speaker. I think it's an antiquated term, but it's what people are familiar with. But I wanted to be a powerful voice because I started to hear all these other voices, you know, the voices like Wayne Dyer or Les Brown, who I've been listening to since fifth grade. And I hear them say you can have, do, and be anything you want. And I thought, well, there's got to be truth to that. So I started to explore it. And that's how I ended up starting my own business as a coach and a speaker. And the beautiful thing about it, Denise, is that because I'm in control of my time, and I'm sure you've talked to many entrepreneurs that say this is a great value, I'm able to do the things that I love, which is theater. It's being on the stage at the theater companies in my city. It's writing plays. I just had one produced. It's writing a screenplay, which I'm almost finishing and I have a deadline for. So I have the space to do those things because I have chosen to design my own life.
I have to ask you this, and I know our audience is vibrating going, but how did she do it? Look, we all know. I mean, I live in Louisiana. The cost of living here is very reasonable. And I live very, very well. My house, where you live, I wouldn't be able to afford it. I'm not even sure you could find the land for it, you know, where it is. But the thing is, just reading and just knowing people from New York, I know what the cost of living is there. So if I know it, probably everybody else knows it. And that has got to be tremendously scary to say, okay, I'm walking away from my paycheck. I'm walking away from all of this that I built. I'm going to get evicted. I mean, what was going through your mind and how did you overcome that chatter? I mean, that self-chatter that says, no, stay safe, stay small, stay safe.
Yeah, well, I'm in central New York, Denise, so where I live in the country.
Oh, okay.
I don't live anywhere near the city, yeah.
For some reason, I thought you were in New York, but still, when I think New York, I just see dollar signs, so.
Yeah,
as opposed to where
I
live.
Yeah, a lot of people do. So
yeah,
it's a common mistake, but I got to tell you, I'm blessed that if I need to go there, I'm a train ride away. You know,
it's about six
hours. But still, that doesn't change the fear. You're right. You know, it was a huge, huge, huge risk. And I wasn't married at the time. My husband and I were just engaged. And we were actually living in a rental house, a little rental property. We were fortunate enough to find a full house. And I told him, I can't take another day. I'm very unhappy. This is not what I want to do. And he said, what do you want to do? I said, I want to be a speaker. I want to inspire. And I had no idea how to do that. And at the time, I was doing a lot of freelance writing work. So what I basically did, this is a great story, is when I was still in news, and this is how I knew where I wanted to land, I covered this story for this huge teachers conference. And the particular story that I was covering is what the industry calls one-stop shopping. That means you go to one location, you get all your audio, and you get all your video. And that can be a great thing for a reporter when they're very tired or very over their work. So that meant I just got to go to one venue. I took the video, I took the audio, I did some interviews, but they had a speaker. And she was super dynamic, and she made the entire audience wear these big red noses, and they were laughing, and I thought, I can do that. I can make those people laugh. I need to talk to this woman. And I thought, she's got to live in New York or L.A., you know, isn't that where all the speakers live? And I purposely, after I was done interviewing everybody, pulled her aside and said, can I interview you? And she's like, oh, sure. And she was all excited about it, and she wanted to promote her book. Between you and I and the rest of your listeners, I had no intention of airing any of her story. I just wanted to know, how did you get started? And then I learned she lived in the same city as I did. And so I bought a book of hers, and the book was basically on how to get started as a speaker. I remember I couldn't wait until I got it. And one of the parts in her book said, if there's something or somebody you see that is doing something you want or love, approach them and ask them for their time. So I thought, well, I'm going to ask her. And so she gave me an hour of her time, told me how she got started, but more than that, she gave me my very first speaking opportunity, which was, and she had never, she didn't even see me on the news, you know, and she's like, I'm sorry, but I just, you know, you seem really dynamic. How would you like to at least give this a shot and speak at this event I'm putting together? So I was very, very blessed that that happened. And from there, I learned how to put myself in front of people, and I had to do it for nothing at first. I had to speak for nothing. And sometimes it was,
I think that's very common, though, isn't it? I mean, most budding speakers, they have to put in the work. They have to speak in front of community centers and, you know, do a lot of free stuff at schools and wherever they can get out there. I mean, I think that's pretty much the norm, isn't it?
Absolutely. The difficult part, though, is when you have to decide to say, no, I can't do this for free anymore. And that is a big risk, because the way, you know, as I developed as a speaker, I also developed, I was earning my coaching certification and developing products and had written a book. So when I would be at these free venues, at least I could make a couple bucks if I sold a few books. But I had hired a coach at that time, and my coach had said to me, you have to stop doing it for free. It's time now to do it for cash. And I just got, I was on the phone with a doctor yesterday that's doing a venue with about 100 women. It's called Ladies Night Out, wanted me to speak, and ended up leaving a voicemail telling me about all the potential it would give me, the foot traffic, I could sell my programs. But that's what they will always, always say to you, because they don't want to pay a keynote. And there's a difference if you're speaking in front of a room where you know you can sell their programs. So being a coach for speakers, I work with creatives and creative coaches and consultants and artists and entertainers, and I teach them how to speak so they can generate cash, and then ultimately that leaves them room to build and create and play in their craft. So when I'm working in the capacity of a speaker coach, the ladies' night out doesn't fit the venue. There's not going to be, there'll be a very small percentage of business owners, I'm sure. But when you're a keynote, you're not promoting a business. It's more of a inspirational, fiery talk. So it, what I had to learn quickly was, one, to say no to the people that wanted me to do it for nothing, and two, how to really show up for my worth and use leverage if necessary so I could get paid, and how to negotiate other things that could make up for the full fee if they couldn't pay it.
Right. So basically what people have to do is really understand that when they're invited, while it's flattering and it may have some monetary value to you, it may not really be where you need to be. And that's
right.
A tough distinction to make, isn't it?
It is, and what I tell those I work with is, you know, for example, when this doctor asked me to do it, I was very flattered, but I had to really, you know, I ask a lot of questions. So I know the caliber of the attendees, because if I can decide that, yes, perhaps I can sell programs there, but then again, I don't want to be a coach that's on the phone every day, all day. You know, I want the space so I can have room to speak, and I want the space so I can write. So I had to make a very bold decision. And I did this a few years ago, I cannot speak without getting paid. And after he went through his spiel about you'll get the foot traffic and there'll be 12 different vendors there, you know, when he was done, I said, I appreciate that, but it's not exposure I'm looking for. It's to inspire. And this is my business, and because it's my business, like you need to get paid for your work, I do need to get paid for mine. So I really learned how to hone the conversation so that they understand, and just, you know, when they say, no, I'm sorry, I have to walk away. And I'm telling the universe, too, that this is what I want. And a lot of times people do have a hard time not accepting a keynote. And there's a big difference between a keynote, you know, where you're at a huge dinner, maybe the American Red Cross, or I'm doing one in October for the Breast Cancer Awareness Dinner. And those keynotes are not the kind of thing where you stand up and talk and you're selling a product. There's a huge difference. So those are the things that you need to get paid for. Yeah.
Right. Do me a favor very quickly and kind of separate that out, because I think a lot of people, I work with a lot of authors and speakers, so I get it. But I think a lot of people don't really understand what is a keynote and what everything else is. So if you could give a quick description of what to look for, and then we'll move on to the rest of my questions.
Sure. Quick description of a keynote is when you are asked to speak as an inspirational or powerful speaker, there is no intention to sell you or sell your program. You are being chosen because you are recognized as a powerful speaker, and you're being chosen to, quote, move the room. The other piece is when you're being asked to be a speaker at an organization, perhaps of women entrepreneurs or high-end executives, and you're teaching, essentially, is the simplest way I can differentiate. In that case, or a lunch and learn is a great word that I could use, or a workshop. In those instances, you are speaking, but you're also teaching, and you have an opportunity in that space to sell you a program or a future talk. So you typically wouldn't get paid for those, but you would convert the room is what I call it. And I built a whole program on how you can be in a room like that without getting paid a keynote fee and still make money.
Perfect. And again, I do know what you're talking about because a lot of my client base is authors and speakers. I am fascinated by y'all, I got to say. I mean, I'm a creative. I am. I'm a creative in my own little way. You know, I build websites in my sleep and I knock out this gorgeous work and I'm very, very proud of it. However, I am a straight-running, high-functioning introvert. Getting on stage doesn't bother me. I don't get tongue-tied. It's just being in a room with a lot of people. After a while, I'm looking for an exit. I'm like, oh, my God, I've got to go now. So it's a real problem for me. So part of me wants to do what you do, and the other part of me is going, no, you do not want to bolt out of the room in the middle of a question and answer session. It's rude, so no. But I think what you're doing is just fascinating. But I want to go back just a little bit because when you're talking about how you got started, you know, you're working this, you know, this job where you're well known and you had really positioned yourself. I guess my question is, while you were doing this other work to go down a different path, were you still working? So were you basically doing double duty, or were you able to just say, no, I don't want to do this anymore, and just start at the base, start at the very beginning? How did that story work out?
Yeah, I did what most people don't. I quit my job.
Oh.
So it was that when you asked me in the beginning, and I had said I'm a huge risk taker, you know, a lot of people are afraid to leave the job behind the 9-to-5 because it's the security. And we are security-driven. We're a security-driven culture. And certainly, yes, there were bills to pay, but it goes to the old adage that when you jump, the net will appear. So I quit my job completely and started. I did get paid for some talks. The woman that I told you about that I had met with, she's a high-end keynote. So she would command a price between $4,000 and $10,000. So if something locally only wanted to pay her $500 or $1,000, she'd give it to me. And to me, that was the world because I got the exposure and I was getting paid. So to supplement that, those little pieces, I was freelance writing for 3 different magazines locally, 2 business magazines and a woman's magazine. And I'm very aggressive. And the way I got those gigs is I went to these big conferences and I would see this women's magazine. For 2 years, I bothered that editor and she finally hired me because I kept sending her stories and I kept showing up. And that's really what anything we do, even in our work and our art and our craft, is all about. But, you know, I would just keep writing. I even wrote for howto.com. I don't even know if it's out there anymore. But they paid $25.
Yep, $25 an article. I don't remember, but I did the same thing. We have a similar story, and this is why I've been wanting to talk with you, because we had this conversation way back in the day when we were trying to set this for our audience. This is about the 4th time we've tried this, and here we are. I'm so excited. But here's the thing. I have a very similar story. I couldn't stand what I was doing. I've always been an entrepreneur. Most of my life I've been a business owner. But when I started Your Office on the Web and Your Virtual Assistant, I was actually in a corporate job, and I was wretched. I can't even be, my stomach tightens just thinking about it. And I did the same thing. I quit. But I gave myself 6 months to the day to make it work. I had just did it, and it worked. I mean, 6 months. The day before my self-imposed deadline was up, I got my first client. I was like, oh, and I've never looked back.
Wow.
So I'm like you. That safety net is something I create for myself. I'm not recommending that people do this. I'm not. It's scary. And you have to have a cast iron stomach to do it. But if you feel like doing it, jump. If you don't want to jump, make sure that you have some kind of safety net and work on the side. But the rewards, the risks and the rewards are about proportionate, I think. For me, they were.
I think it is about your personality. But I would even offer, too, that there are times in our lives where we get our job ripped out from us and we have no choice but to find a way. And essentially, that's how I viewed it, is I had to find a way. And it was slow at first. I didn't make a lot of money at first. It wasn't until I got, I think it was year three, I got very brave and hired a coach. And I didn't have the money in the bank to pay that coach. And what I hired that coach to do was to teach me how to sell my coaching programs. I didn't know how. You know, I had this certification. I could stand up on a stage and people would love me. And then I'd go to my little table and, you know, I would expect people just to flock to me and be like, oh, I have to work with you. But they didn't know how to communicate that, and I didn't know how to get it from them, if that wasn't.
Right. Yeah,
so,
to ask for
you know,
the sale.
Right. I borrowed money from my family, which I have never done, to pay for this coach. And I said to the coach, I remember, and he's been a mentor of mine for a very long time, and I said, I'm going to pay you, but if you don't teach me how to make money, I'm not going to be able to pay you. And essentially what I was doing was trying to make him responsible for my actions. And he said to me, I'll show you what to do, but you need to show up.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The story I always tell is that that year that I hired him, I had only made $13,000 writing and speaking. In the first 5 weeks of learning how to sell coaching programs and talk to people, I made $13,000. And then cleared six figures that first year. So I know it's possible. The thing that stops people are their stories.
Okay, explain that. Because you mean the self-stories, the stories you tell yourself, like, oh, I'm too tired, or I'm too broke, or this isn't going to work. Are you talking about the negative self-talk?
All of it. Absolutely.
Yep, it'll kill
you. The stories that, you know, I can't do it, I'm not good enough. This is a dumb idea. No one's going to buy my coaching. No one wants to hire me as a speaker. No one wants to fill in the blank. You know, and
fear.
Was I there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's fear. It is. And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, whoever's hearing me right now, if you're in that place, find a mentor that not only teaches you a skill set, but guides you with mindset. Because you will always hit those fear barriers. To this day, I still do. I had a talk Wednesday night and was actually selling my Convert the Room program. And it was wonderful. There was this nice little line of ladies waiting to come and buy, and everyone has a story. And the last woman in the line said to me, I just can't do it. I just can't stand in front of a room and sell a product. It's just not in my personality. Story.
And why was she there?
That's a great point, you know. So she was still trying to stay in that safety zone, in our secure, safe place, by saying to me, I want to grow my business, Jolene, but it's not in my personality to try to sell something. And the truth of the matter is, and I don't know if she didn't hear this or she didn't understand it, if you're selling, there's a problem. You shouldn't be selling, you're serving.
Right.
And
right.
It's a completely different space. So, you know, a lot of times I'm really working with my clients to get them to that place so they understand it's within your integrity to share your knowledge. And there's nothing wrong with taking money for it. And so those are the mindset pieces I'm talking about, that if you find someone to work with, make sure they work you through that. Because too often people connect with coaches, and if they don't implement, they get on the phone with a coach, and the coach is berating them and scolding them for not doing it. And if those muscles, those fear muscles or courage muscles haven't been worked, that's where
right.
the work has to be. It has to be helping them shift their belief system so they believe in themselves, and removing any of those blocks so they can go, wait a minute, I can do this. I can say that. I understand now. I understand that I'm serving.
Listen, I agree with you that getting a coach or a mentor or multiple coaches or mentors over time is really the only way to go. When I first started out, that didn't exist. I mean, when I first started my business in 2000, we barely had GUI, you know, graphical user interface. So our websites were basically black and white. We didn't have images. I mean, just in 15 years, you know, internet progress has just been phenomenal. And with that, of course, you know, you learn new techniques and new processes. But back in the day, there was nobody to teach me. I mean, I built my business just on sheer common sense and guts, to tell you the truth. But there was nobody to coach me. There was nobody to mentor me. But when that started popping up and I started realizing that some of these people that I had followed for a while and that I admired and respected, that they were able to coach or mentor, I did it. I jumped on it. And I am never without a coach or a mentor.
Me too.
I mean, it's
Me
just
too.
So, so important.
You have to be able to understand. One of the things my coach said to me, and I'm not sure who said it. It's a quote that's famous. Maybe you know. But he would say to me, if you want what I have, you have to do what I do. And a lot of entrepreneurs, right, they want to grow their business and they want that income and they want that freedom. But then when it comes down to doing the work, they don't want to. And that's where the stories and the fear come. And it's not criticism. I'm not criticizing that because I've been there. But what I do know is it is absolutely possible to move through it. It's conditioned in our subconscious from things in the past, and that's why we're afraid. And if you're willing to say, I'm going to conquer this, what I can tell you is you condition the muscles, and it's called habituation. It's psychology. The more you do it, the easier it gets. Because one of the biggest fears that the people I work with is, it's not even standing up in front of the room so much. It's following up and making phone calls afterwards to people. You know, people that have actually approached. Yeah,
right.
It's because they're afraid of the rejection.
It's not fun work. Exactly, exactly.
They don't want to, yeah, they don't want to, and I've heard, let me get the dog out of the room and close the door. I've heard many women say, you know, I just know that, you know, they're going to say no. And then I'll say, well, tell me how you know. And they're just feeding back on something that happened in their past, because what's interesting is our subconscious mind doesn't know if we got rejected in ninth grade by a boy. And if we're pulling up those feelings at age 35 before we make a call, they're so immediate to the subconscious. Do you know what I mean? So we're pulling back on it. Yeah, yeah. So that's why we resist.
In fact, I have been working recently. I don't know if you know what EFT tapping is, emotional freedom technique.
I have an EFT practitioner.
Oh, listen, it's the weirdest. It's just one of those things. When the time is right, the time is right. And I have clients who do this. I've built websites for EFT practitioners. I've got good friends that are practitioners. I'm like, oh, yeah, sounds interesting. It just never really sunk in. And then all of a sudden, the tapping solution had this big summit, and it was free. And I went, okay. I was hooked, and let me tell you, it works. You talk about clearing out your subconscious. And I'm not going to go all woo-woo on the audience. Just check it out if you're interested, good. If you're not, good. I'm telling you, I've been tapping on my head and my wrist and I'm having a good time, and it does clean out some messes. So anytime I start having imposter fear or negative self-chat, I just take a moment and just kind of tune in to what my self-conscious is telling me, and then I tell it to go blow a smoke ring somewhere, and that's the end of that.
Yeah.
It works.
Yeah.
It does work. So, I mean, just find ways to get around these things is what I'm saying. It could be EFT. It could be meditation. It could be just a rubber band around your wrist. Whatever it is, just find a technique to make that stop and stop that loop in your head.
I agree with you, and be willing to try it. You know, EFT, I thought the same thing. My current mentor, she's a marketing expert, but she is now an EFT practitioner. So our sessions could be all tapping, or we split it up. And it clears the blocks.
It does. It's, you know, look, I have a lot of spiritual beliefs. And not too much really makes me go, oh, come on. But EFT, for some reason, although I never outright rejected it, I just wasn't interested in it. But all of a sudden, it was just everywhere. I couldn't turn anywhere on the internet or in my email box or on Facebook without seeing something about tapping or EFT. And I just went, all right, fine. Dear universe, I'm paying attention. Get off my back. And the minute I started paying attention, I was like, well, I'll be darned. What took me so long? So you just never know. I mean, when the time is right to get a coach or a mentor or find a way to, you know, clean out your mind, it'll show up. Just start paying attention to all of the signs and don't keep ignoring them. It's a bad idea to keep ignoring the things that keep showing up.
True story.
Okay, so you work with, and I'm sorry for our audience, we got a little bit off there, but it may be helpful to you. I hope it is. Okay, so you work with a lot of creative entrepreneurs. You work with entertainers, artists, writers, and you're talking about helping them remove those blocks. Is there anything else you can chat about on that particular topic? How, you know, is there any, maybe a for instance, where you had somebody recently that just had a big block and you worked them through it?
Sure, yeah, yeah. So what I do is I work with this breed, if you will, because I'm that breed. And one thing I noticed about us, about creatives, and you're one of them, is that we go through cycles of power and creativity where we feel very big and strong in what we're doing. And then we go through periods where we actually get depressed. If yes. after we've completed a project, and that's not
unusual. We're tired. I have to ask, because I'm going through this right now. When I said I did a 3-day all-nighter, I wasn't kidding. I mean, I've averaged maybe 6 hours of sleep for the last 3 days. I'm still kind of riding on that adrenaline, and I'm supposed to be somewhere tomorrow, and I don't know that I'll make it. I have a feeling I will be flat on the couch trying to recoup.
Do it. Because creatively, it's interesting. When I really started to explore my own cycle, so I'll speak briefly to the cycle and then a breakthrough that a client had, is I started to recognize and read books about the cycles that creatives go through. And the first book I ever read was called The Van Gogh Blues. And it was by an author by the name of Eric Mizell. And he is a creative coach. And he discovered with all of the people that he worked with is they either they had blocks and couldn't begin a project, or they'd be in the midst of a project and complete it and go into this severe depression. And a lot of them struggled with addiction or depression issues because once the cycle of creativity winds down, they feel empty. And I remember an interview with Elizabeth Gilbert. She wrote Eat, Pray, Love. Everyone said, okay, now what? You wrote this bestseller, now what? And that puts an extreme amount of pressure on a creative because they've got to top that. And it shouldn't be that way at all. So I had a client who does very similar work to you, does websites and a lot of social media, and she gets very, very into her craft. She's actually an artist, so she'll do a lot of watercolor work and incorporate that in what she's doing into the website she builds. And she's actually in London. And one of the things she was really struggling with is she didn't believe her work was good enough. And, of course, I look at these websites, and I was blown away by this woman. She had was that no one was going to buy her work because she really believed, because we are such an electronically driven society now, that people just want the easy, quick, build-it-yourself type of website, and they weren't going to buy hers. And the way we worked her through that block is I just call play. And there's lots of different exercises that we would do where one of them was, listeners can do this, it's fun, number on a piece of paper from 1 to 15, just different lives that you wish you could have, or different jobs, if you will, whatever word fits better, that you wish you could have. You know, when some people write, I have actress on there, of course, an award-winning director. She had not a horse breeder, someone that actually does the training of the horses and does horseback riding with kids. She had that. She had all of these things that kept coming up. And when you do that, a theme shows up. And what she was doing in her work is she recognized she was focusing so much on just the art piece that she wasn't allowing herself to explore other parts of her creativity. And that's super common with creatives. You know, it's like some people will be great dancers or great actors, but you put a canvas in front of them with a teacher and they'll paint an amazing picture. And what it does is it actually internally unblocks all of these things that are keeping them from growing. So her issue wasn't about her not making really good watercolor. Her issue was not believing that she was creative in any way, shape, or form. So when she started to explore these lives and then actually do things connected to them, she started to clear.
Well, that makes sense. Now, one thing I have noticed with creatives, I'm maybe only half a creative, I'm not sure, because I find that most creatives simply are lousy business people. Has this occurred to you? So I'm going to go with I'm a half a creative. I'm not full.
So are you asking me if that's the case? That maybe.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting.
They just don't seem to have a whole lot of business sense, or in some cases, common sense.
Well, we're a different breed, you know? Yeah, we're a different breed. So I think that's why I discovered that a lot of the people I work with, many of them aren't afraid, or they already are on a stage in a way. So for them to start becoming a teacher or speaker to earn income and learn how to grow that way is actually fairly simple for them.
Really?
You know? Yeah, you know, because, you know, there's an actor I work with who wants to start doing speaking. And, you know, a lot of people, there are coaches out there that are certified coaches, but there's a lot of artists out there that don't need to be certified to paint or certified to teach how to act. Do you know what I mean? So what they're doing is they're struggling so much in their current work or their current job, and they're not giving enough love to their craft. And so it's an actually simple, fairly simple model when you start producing an income as a speaker and teacher. And what I do personally, because it's not, I think I'm decent in business, but I suck with numbers. So I have an accountant for me, you know, and I learned early on, I can't do it all myself. I'm really good at the creative stuff. You know, I can put together marketing tools and things like that. I'm excellent at that. And I can negotiate. I know how to close a sale. But when it comes to tracking all of my money and keeping my businesses in order, I have to use a tool called QuickBooks, and I have an accountant that helps me. And at least once a month, we're on GoToMeeting, so she can grab the mouse on my computer and straighten it out.
Right.
But don't let that distress anybody, because if we were meant to do all things, we would be doing all things.
Exactly.
We have to be able to accept the fact that we're good at some things and we're not so good at others, and that's all there is to it. It's the way it is.
Right. And I think, listen, I'm a high-functioning introvert. I think I've told you this. I'm also very, very good at so many things that I'm a control freak, and I recognize this. And I think it's fairly common in the business community, especially for entrepreneurs. And what I have found, and I'm wondering if you have found this out with your coaching programs, if you're having to coach people through letting go and learning to outsource and learning to say, okay, this is not the best and highest use of my time. For instance, you have an accountant. I suck at numbers. I freely admit it. I mean, I had a 4.0 until I hit algebra. That was a mess. I mean, and I'll tell you off the show what I said to my teacher. It wasn't pleasant. But anyway, there are just so many things. But what I find is that there's a lot of resistance saying, no, I don't have the money. I can, you know, I can do it. I have to do it all myself. I don't have the money. I'm not making enough money speaking or writing books or building websites, whatever it is. How do you get people through that? You know, how do you explain to people that doing $5 an hour work or even $35 an hour work when you should be doing $100 an hour work only is just not in your best interest? I find that's a big, big kicking point.
There is such a low percentage, Denise, of people that will embrace that. And it's because of that empty space of fear that if they let go, and I hear that, you know, I hear people say, well, I'm not making enough to pay this person. It's about risk. And don't get me wrong, I'm not telling everyone to jump out of an airplane and do some crazy things, Panure, that you may follow or listen to or track. So your Brendan Bouchards or even your little players on Shark Tank, like Mark
Guess
Cuban.
Who I was
I
listening
love...
to before we got on. I had him in my CD player.
Which one?
Brendan Bouchard. Brendan.
Oh, yeah. I mean, listen to what he says. It's in the mm-hmm. thing that the difference between the person who's not willing to make the risk and someone like this Brendan who is willing to make a risk is just that. He's willing to do it. And you know what it takes? My coach always used to say this to me, is it takes faith. And I would scoff at him. I'd be like, that's not good enough. And the reason is because we are very linear thinkers. And so we need everything in a purposeful order. So in our minds, it's like, well, in order to have an accountant, we need to have money to pay for the accountant. Well, absolutely, we do. But what would happen if you hired the accountant and then took the risks necessary to go out and make the money so you could pay for the accountant? So the percentage of people that are willing to take that kind of risk is less than 20. In the work
See,
that
I
do.
I find that sad. I find that tremendously
it
sad.
It is sad. And so
very
I'm
limiting.
Hearing you ask. It's what the frightening part is that other 80%, you can give them everything you have. And I made a big mistake when I started coaching. The mistake was I cared more about their business than they did and would give everything I had to a point where I exhausted myself. And I would do 6 months of teaching them how to make money, how to have conversations, how to find or create speaking gigs, all of the things that I did successfully. And I had fallen apart too. I had my doubts too. But I kept going, and what I noticed is that roughly 80%, and it's the 80-20 rule, roughly 80% of these women would stop working because they would let these stories come into play. They wouldn't keep pushing. They want it to be, and they want it to be easy because they were taught. It is what we're taught in our culture, myself included, Denise, that things should be easy. It's instant gratification. And the only way that you're going to be successful is to recognize that that paradigm is BS. It's a paradigm we were brought up with. We were brought up with a paradigm that you go to school or trade school or pick up a family business, whatever, and then you work. And you work and you don't always love it. And you make money. And you don't always make enough money. And that's the paradigm we're conditioned to. So then when someone like yourself or myself steps out and says, no, I'm going to design my own life, build my own hours, create my own income, there's a backlash that's very uncomfortable from people. And you'll hear people say, you can't do that. That's not going to work for you. I hear it all the time. My own friends don't even know what I do. I think they think I sit home and eat bonbons. I don't know. You know?
Listen, try to explain to your family or your friends what a virtual assistant is. Seriously. I mean, it's a little bit more in the modern lexicon now. But when I first started out, I would get people looking at me with this blank look. So finally, I just said, oh, I'm a web developer. Oh, okay, I got that. They yeah. get that part. I don't even go into the rest of it. It's not worth the trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that happens a lot, too, is people say, so you're a motivational speaker, and I'm just to the point where I go, yes, you know, if that's what fits for you, yes. But, you know, what I do, Denise, is I am a voice for people that lose their own. And I my tagline is take your voice back, because I think what we do is we step into our life listening to everyone else and thinking that that's the gospel of it and that's the way we must live. And then what happens is when we choose to take our voice back and say or do something that is completely out of the norm or is a different cultural paradigm, it shocks people. It scares people. People can actually become angry with us. I've lost relationships because I have chosen to take my voice back.
I was going to ask about that, because that's a very common story that I hear from people. It's like, you know, if you've all of a sudden you've lost a lot of weight or you quit smoking or you became a very successful business person, all of a sudden the people around you are not really the people that you thought were around you. It's an it's sad, but it's an interesting thing to watch happen.
It's funny you say that, because I just had this very conversation yesterday with a friend of mine who lives, I live in such a tiny, tiny little village. It's a little fishing village. And
you
mean
though,
an alpaca farmer.
I live in three streets wide, three streets deep. That's about it. And sugarcane fields. I love it.
Oh, that's great. Well, mine are cow fields and horse fields, and she raises alpacas, and she's a very savvy businesswoman. And we were talking about how when you have these extreme, this success, and it doesn't have to be an overnight big thing. It can be an event. I've had events that are so, so successful, just the energy I'm talking about, I suddenly recognize people don't treat me the same. They don't look at me the same. People that I thought were my friends aren't really, they don't stand next to me anymore. They don't support me anymore. But what I recognize it to be now, because I used to take it personally, is I recognize they're hurting because they want to be in that same space and they don't know how. And the natural reaction is to be critical. Just like you said, when someone quits smoking, when someone loses weight, you know, they want to criticize the person for it and be like, oh my gosh, instead of, wow, congratulations to you. Good for you for being brave enough to do what most people won't. And when you step into that 20%, you are, and you know, I've had this conversation with my mentor, and maybe you know this experience, I'm sure you do. There's a kind of loneliness, and I don't want to say that to scare anybody, but you become part of a collective consciousness that is very small. And to find other people that believe in your same belief system and same work ethic is difficult. I find sometimes when I go through my Facebook newsfeed, I can't, because there's so much negative, there's so much hate, and there's so much anger, and I personally can't handle it, you know, and that's just because I've grown in that personal space. Someone just recently, a friend of mine today, posted this whole, I didn't even read it, I read the first line, and he tagged like 60 people in it, and I was one of them, going on and on about someone stepping on his flag in his country, which I understand his passion to defend it. But it was a very verbal, angry post, and I can't be a part of that energy. So I have to separate myself from that. And when you start separating yourself from those other voices, you may stand alone for a little while. I promise you, you're not. And what I mean is, whatever faith you adhere to, you're never alone. And when you start asking the universe to bring to you, bring to me the people I need to help me grow, bring to me the love that I need, bring to me the space that I need, the faith that I need for my business to grow, for this venture to grow, for my art to grow, it shows up.
It does, and I'm so glad to hear you say that. Listen, one of my favorite practices, and it took me years to get out of my own way to figure this out. My practice every morning when I wake up is I stretch my arms up. I stretch my arms up towards the sky, to the roof, towards God, whatever you want to call it. And the first thing out of my mouth is, thank you. And I say thank you all day, all
That's
day.
Great.
And it really works for me. And I'm not saying that it's a practice like, okay, God or universe or spirits or whoever is listening, I'm going to say thank you and you're going to reward me, right? It's not malicious like that. I'm genuinely grateful to wake up every day. I'm genuinely grateful to have the clients that I have, the business that I have, the passion, the enthusiasm, the creativity that I have. I mean, I look around me all day long and I'm smiling going, thank you. And I am a happier person. And the more grateful I am, the more successful I am. It just works that way.
And people that are hearing you say that right now, the percentage that hears you and understands does the same practice. I'm one of them. The percentage that doesn't, I promise there will come a day where it makes sense. Because I remember Jack Canfield saying that years ago, and I'm like, whatever. And it sounds it sounds like, okay. You know, and so I'd be like, thanks, God. But now I understand what you're saying, that when I am thankful and grateful, I am moved. I am moved by it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, yeah.
The little talk I had Wednesday, I was so moved. And I was driving to rehearsal. I'm in a show, so I left the talk, driving to rehearsal, and I was weeping, saying thank you so much because I've come so far in 5 years because I chose to never give up, as scary as it got. And Denise, there were times I thought, what am I doing?
Oh, we all have that.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to have a cast iron stomach to do what we do. I mean, literally, we do what we do almost in the absence of fear. It's there. It's just not enough to make us go, ooh, let me rethink this. We don't rethink it. We just keep on going.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I usually say when I'm working with clients that talk about fear is, I don't believe we can ever be truly fearless. I think for me, I've learned to carry it with me. It's almost like, and I think it was Jack Canfield that said that, it's almost like I imagine this little motorcycle and they're in that sidecar. You know that they're there. And, you know, when I was in the middle of writing the screenplay, I kept hearing these voices say, you are wasting your time. And I literally would say out loud, not now, you know, and then it would just disappear. And so that's the conditioning that anybody who wants to alleviate these fears, if they don't want to try diving into EFT, which I'm with you, I love it. You know, practice recognizing it's always going to be there, but it's your choice whether you're going to let it take you or not. And it's when it's with you along on the ride, speak to it. Say, not now. I don't have time for this now. And you, what
oh,
you
I do the same thing. I will literally hold my hand up like a school crossing guard and go, no, stop. It's amazing. I live alone. It's a good thing because people would think I was nuts. I'm talking to air. I'm talking to the cats. I'm talking to the cupboards. But, you know, you do hear these voices. You do, and I'm not saying it's voices in our heads, but you do hear them. Pay attention. Is it a good, you know, is the message good? Go with it. Is the message bad, like what you're describing? Make them knock it off. Tell yourself, no, 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 not going down that road. Thank you. Get lost.
Yeah.
Okay, so what else do you do that, you know, when you're coaching with people and when you're moving people forward, are there any other kind of tips or tricks that you can teach people to say, you know, you can do this. You know, stand up and be the person that you were meant to be.
I think reminders, you know, when I get caught up with somebody and I've had people call me and say, I just can't do this. You know, it's one thing to sit and egg them on and say, yes, you can, or cheer them on and say, yes, you can, yes, you can. When people hit blocks, what I discover is they want to hide. And, you know, I'll reach out to them and say, what's going on? And what's happening is what they're discovering is their shadow side of them. And the reality, if you will, of knowing, gee, if I step into this, it could get bigger. And really, there are no secret weapons. There are no ninja tools. All there are the things that you and I talk about. And everybody is different. So everybody needs to explore and do different things. Like, I've tried meditation for many, many years. The meditation
tool
that works for me. I can't either.
I fall asleep. I literally fall over and drool. I cannot meditate. My little squirrel brain. That's a picture for you. My little monkey brain doesn't slow down enough. I'm like, oh, I need to buy a Thanksgiving turkey. Oh, crud, it's only me. I mean, seriously, that's what happens
when
I try to meditate.
So that's not wrong. And that's what I end up telling people is they think that they should be a certain way or feel a certain way by now. They should have come further. And I think one of the greatest things that I can do as a coach is to let them know, no, you're exactly in the space you're supposed to be in. And what that does, it's like almost like a miracle drug, is it gives them permission to be not okay, and it somehow gives them the steam they need to say, all right, I've had enough. Because we all function differently. My meditation in the morning, I want a cup of coffee and I journal. I write it out. That's how
right.
I am. You know, I've gone to a zillion workshops and I'll go to a zillion more where they'll start with meditation. And I don't not love it. But I'm like, well, I can't wait till this is over so we can get to the meat and potatoes. You know? So whatever work, people, we need to let it work for people. So if people call me and they're stressed and they can't get through something, say it's a phone call. I just guide them gently and I'll say, can you do one more? Do one more. Dial one more time. And when you're done, call me back. And sometimes that's all they need in that space. So depending on what they need when they come forward, sometimes I'll dance with that person until I can figure it out. Because we're so personal sometimes that even when we're as scared as we are, my own clients don't want to tell me that. And the last thing I'm going to do is criticize them for it or make them feel bad for it. So I think when I allow them to be, that's when the strength that they need emerges. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, because we're very individual. And here's the thing, Jolene, and I know you know this. I'm not the same person I was 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, certainly not 20 years ago. We're constantly growing and evolving. I mean, I don't know about you. I listen to Audible books, business books while I'm working because I can compartmentalize. I can literally listen to something in my left ear and build a website at the same time without breaking stride. But I will listen to the same audiobook. I might listen to it once, and then several weeks later I might go back to it. Right now I've been listening to Brendan Burchard. We're talking about him again, The Charge. Now, I have that book in hardback. It didn't resonate with me. But once I had it on my iPad and Audible and I started listening to it, I promise you I've probably listened to all or part of it 20, 25 times. And every single time. Every time without fail, something will catch me and I'll go, oh, I didn't hear that before. Ooh, and it's always right there when I need it. So
see,
we're always changing. We're always growing. We're always the same information that we think we already know. We don't really know it. Something new is going to pop out of that old information if you let it. Does that make sense?
Oh, my gosh, yes. I love that you said that because I think sometimes we think this isn't working or this doesn't. And you're proof that sometimes it does, but just in a different way at a different time.
At a different time.
When we're ready for it.
Right.
I heard someone say the other day, they were explaining what A Course in Miracles was to someone who wasn't familiar with it. And I was eavesdropping.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. I was eavesdropping only because I was right behind them. And I loved what she was sharing with this individual that didn't know what it was. She said, what's great about it is you may pick it up, start to go through it, the lessons, and then put it down. And 5 years later, pick it up again, get halfway through the book, put it down. Because you're not ready for that piece, or you're only ready
exactly.
for a certain amount of it. And that made me feel better because that's how I tend to move with that. You know, I pick it up and I'll
mm-hmm.
do it for a year, and then I won't for two. And I'll
right.
pick it up and I'll do it for 6 months. And
right.
it's okay. You know, and I
really
want to say it's okay. Yeah.
It
doesn't mean you're giving up on something. And I want to make this clear. I believe we hit a threshold with things where you've garnered enough information and your mind and body say, I'm good right now. Let that be okay.
Absolutely. And then if you ever need it again, listen, one of the very first things that I ever picked up that kind of got me on my path, honestly, I was always a bit of an entrepreneur from a tiny child on. I was a bit of an entrepreneur, you know, lemonade stands, the whole bit. But what really got me, and I can pinpoint, I was at a garage sale years ago, a long time ago, And I picked up this little plastic binder, and it had a bunch of cassette tapes in it, I think 8 cassette tapes in it. And I still have them. They're yellow, and I don't have a cassette player, but I'm hanging on to them. They're by Zig Ziglar.
Oh, wow!
And I picked it up, honest to God, Jolene, because I loved his name, Zig Ziglar. What the heck kind of name is that? I was like, 50 cents, sold. And I brought him home, and I popped him into my cassette player. I was hooked. I'm still hooked. I actually watched his funeral online. I mean, the man was just brilliant. And his wisdom is, as far as I'm concerned, it's never, ever, ever going to fade. But that being said, and I don't even know how many years ago this was now, I still and will continue to find Zig Ziglar wisdom that just goes, oh, there it is, right when I needed it. It will always pop up.
How old were you?
I'm sorry?
How old were you when you bought those?
Probably 20s, early 20s.
Oh, that's so cool.
Early 20s. I don't know. It was a long time ago. Not that long ago, but it was a while back. But I'm not giving them up. I'm telling you, they're in a safe spot. This is how important these things were to me. I've got a little stash in my garage of stuff that I do not want to lose if anything happens to my house.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in that go bag. It's in there. It's just, for some reason, that just got me at a time when I needed to be gotten. And I guess that goes back to my original point, is don't just listen to something once or try to learn something once. Just go back when you need it. You'll know when you need it. Just keep going back. Nothing, it's not, just because you listened to it once or read it once or tried to do it once doesn't mean that's the last time. And I can't stress that enough.
I agree with you completely. It's self-mastery is ongoing. I had someone ask me once, how long do I have to keep doing this? I said, for the rest
forever.
Of the day. Yeah, it's never,
forever.
You never just, yeah.
Listen, this has been fascinating. I'm so, so, so glad you made it. Do you have any last thoughts you want? We've got 2 minutes. Do you have any last thoughts you want to leave the audience with?
What I would tell them is, if anyone that is listening feels uncertain or stuck and they don't know what direction to go into, people always ask me, how do I discover my purpose? How do I figure it out? And I think they want a solid answer. And there isn't one. The only way you're going to discover what makes you tick or what you're passionate about, honestly, is go out and play. Go out and go to a painting class. Go out and see a show. See what makes you tick. I believe there's a frequency within all of us. And as we grow older, for whatever reasons, whether people told us we couldn't have things, that frequency gets buried. If you feel lost or uncertain, give yourself permission to be lost and go explore and play. And I promise you, things will resonate with you and you'll discover things about yourself you never knew. That's it.
That is so true. That is absolutely true. Where can people find you on the web?
Please come find me at jolenemoody.com. And my mother got carried away with the E's in my name. It's J-O-L like Larry, double E, N like Nancy E, and then Moody with a Y. I always joke Moody like miserable. jolenemoody.com. And from there you can learn more about me, learn more about what I do, find where I am on social media if you'd like to follow me. I'm very playful on social media, so I like to have my followers, and I'll follow you back, and if you have questions, I'm here to answer them.
Excellent. Didn't you tell me you have a book out? I thought you did.
I do have a book. I wrote it in 2012 and actually just brought it back to the publisher to get a new cover.
Oh.
So, but if you go to the website, you'll see the book under writing. The book is there, and it's called Memoirs of Normalcy. And I wrote the book for people that are struggling with that old 9-to-5 paradigm and want to break out to design their own life. It's a little bit of my story when I left news to do what I'm doing now. A lot of wisdom in other people's stories as well. And so by the time you're done with the book, you're ready to make the shift.
And, you know, that's another word that keeps coming up, shift. For some reason, and I'm paying very close attention to it because it shows up every day for the last month or so. I'm actually writing a book with the word shift in the title. I read a book the other day with the word shift in the title. It's, you know, I've learned not to just ignore these things when the same, it's like a flashing sign says, Denise, pay attention. Okay, got it. Thank you.
Yep. Good for you.
Yeah. It'll be fun. Well, listen, Jolene, thank you so much for being with me here today. I'm so glad we finally got together. It's been a little bit challenging, but you're here, and I think it was a great, great interview. You gave our audience a lot to think about, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Denise. I appreciate it as well.
Well, listen, everybody, the show will be available for download in about an hour, and you can also find us in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Jolene Moody, and I will see you next week. And everybody, have a wonderful Mother's Day.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.